Welcome to the fifth preseason Supercoach Coach podcast. My name is Marcus and I'm joined again this week by FB Donkey. Welcome back, mate.
Thanks, mate. I am panicking hardcore.
We choose names before jumping into a chat room, and yours this week is where the rookie's at. And I think that's a sentiment that's broadly shared across social media at the moment. Lots and lots of people on Twitter asking what they're going to do with their team structures and which rookies they're going to pick. I'm guessing that's what you're referring to, Mark. Top of mind.
Yeah, absolutely, mate. I mean, people reckon that there's toilet paper shortages, but I reckon there's less rookies than there is toilet paper around at the moment.
All right. So before we get into it, we'll just do our plugs as we do each week. Patreon.com/supercoachcoach. If you're looking to support the show, we give out $250 to the top averaging Patreon by the end of the year, so you can get involved in that. And we also release bonus episodes. We'll record a little bonus after this episode as well, Mark. And for the rest of you who are unable to support, thanks for listening and thanks for joining the show. And to get more involved in supporting the community or representing the community, don't forget the Supercoach Coach group and the Supercoach Coach ranked leagues are available via the podcast notes. So look out for those links to sign up. There's also links to our Discord group and our forum if you're keen to get involved in some banter. Okay, so Mark, you actually helped to put together a bit of the rundown for this show. Normally, we run through the rookies, but I think we're going to let some of that dust settle, do a bit of analysis before we crack back into the rookies.
Well, we were going to talk about all the rookies that are likely to get games, but it would have been a very short show, mate. So we had to come up with some other stuff. So I'm going to look into Gawn versus Naismith, because I think that that's almost the key question that we're looking at the moment. Talk a little bit about midfield structure, so how many premiums you're likely to take in the midfield, and maybe some contingency plans if the rookies really don't show up.
Awesome. Sounds great, mate. So why don't we just jump into it, and with that first topic that you flagged, Gawn versus Naismith. So earlier on in the preseason, we did do our ruck show, and that was just after Max Gawn had gone down with a bit of a medial strain. Good news is we've just seen Max Gawn play in the preseason 2 game for Melbourne, which is certainly great news. Good to see him out on park. I sort of assumed that as long as we saw Max Gawn before the season started, that we were almost certainly to go in with a Grundy-Gawn 1-2 punch. But Naismith and the value that he's offering, especially in the context of us not having a heap of rookies, has come sharply into focus. Naismith is still in only 3% of teams at the time of recording this show, Mark, so certainly still a bit more of a niche strategy. $251,500 is his price point. Now, have you seen or heard a little bit in the last couple of weeks that has given you a little bit more focus on this selection, Mark?
I think that really what we're looking at is maybe we can't afford to pay $700,000 for 2 different rucks if there's no rookies around. Having that much money invested in 2 players is very much benefited in a guns and rookies strategy. So it's more around looking at how can we fill our teams full of players that are going to be playing and scoring well. I think our definition of a rookie is probably expanding a little bit. So it's looking to include players that are in that $200,000 to $250,000 range just because there's not a lot of options at a really cheap price. So, and that makes someone like Naismith a bit more attractive. So it's not really about what Naismith has done. It's more about if he's going to be playing number one ruck for a side, you'd think that he would be able to average 75+. And if he can do that, price at $250,000, we may just have to take him because there's not a lot of other players $250,000 or cheaper that are going to be able to do that and earn us money for our teams. A little bit dependent on Sinclair and sort of what his role is going to be and how much ruck time he's actually going to get. But I know that you've been picking a team, Marcus, and you would have at some point thought, how can I balance this team and get enough players on field with the lack of rookies that are available and just pushing us potentially towards a different option in the rucks. I guess that there's some backup plans involved with that. You've got some people might pick Segler up forward. I'm a bit iffy on that now more than I was earlier in the preseason. But if players like Cameron play, Williams from West Coast, probably unlikely, Zeri from North, like if any of those guys play, it probably gives you a bit more insurance going down the Naismith track. My preference is definitely pick Gawn after seeing him just dominate a half of football the other night. It's just, I'm not sure whether we're going to be able to. We may just be forced into a situation where Naismith presents too much value.
what would good look like for a return on player like Naismith if you were starting him? Would you be expecting 80 or more points? What would be the minimum to be a successful pick?
I think you'd probably need to see at least 70 points off 80% game time, if possible. You're really looking at game time stats and seeing how much time he's spending up forward relative to Sinclair. I think Sinclair is a significantly better forward, so ultimately the Swans would want to put Naismith into the ruck more. And it's not as clear-cut as Witts a few years ago, where we ended up making a late move towards Witts, and it took quite a fair bit of risk, but it did work out. But he was number one ruck, and clearly number one ruck in that side. And I think that that is a little bit different. If I'm not taking Gawn, for the reasons we covered in the ruck show, I'm not really comfortable taking any of the other sort of medium-priced rucks. Like Nick Knapp would be second on my list, and it seems like the Supercoach community looks at it pretty similar, that they've got him at 13%. And Sam Jacobs is potentially interesting if he's going to be number one ruck at the Giants for 348, just that extra little bit of value. But Jacobs, Nick Knapp's durability is a problem, and his time on ground's a problem. Jacobs has the premium scoring history. Maybe age is a problem, but he could be a potential Naismith alternative. I just think that at some point, these mid-price rucks are going to become relevant in decision-making, and making the Gawn decision is almost the first decision you have to make with your team. I'm guessing Gawn's just locked for you, mate.
Over Naismith, for me, that still seems like quite an easy decision. I'd still worry, even if Naismith is listed to start in round one, that given a poor patch of form, if he's playing with Sinclair still on the team, that at some point Sinclair might take over as sole ruck and Naismith might even get dropped to the twos. So the fact that you have him at R2 does add also a level of risk to that pick that should be considered when making a pass on Max Gawn. You'd be in a pretty tough spot if you end up with a 250K ruck that starts to miss some games. So at this point, it's more a remote option rather than anything that I'm seriously considering. And I'm wondering if you saw the game Tigers versus the Magpies with Darcy Cameron actually scoring a fair few points. He had 12 disposals, 20 hitouts, a couple of goals, and he scored 127 Supercoach points. If he ends up getting games and scoring all right early on in the season, he could potentially be a little bit of an answer.
I think if we had two of those rookie rucks get up, that becomes quite a viable strategy. If you ended up with two rookie rucks named round one, that would be very, very strong to pick them because there's just not rookies anywhere else and they might score okay. It's just that if you're picking one at R2, I think that leaves you, you almost would have to pick someone like Segler in the forward line because you're just really, really exposed to Cameron being dropped. So he was awesome in that game, brilliant, but there was no Grundy. So it's not really a test for him. It's great that he's had decent sort of preseason games before and we've never really seen him in the main thing. And when we have, he's been pretty disappointing. So for me, it's probably a little bit hard to see how he's gone from being very poor when we've seen him at AFL level in the past to being able to score really well and do well at Collingwood. So, and he's got to beat Cox for that position in the team, you would think, as the second ruck for Collingwood. So I hope he does. I think that realistically the way that I would see him would be that if he plays really well and is named, that would make me more likely to consider someone like Naismith, who scored 79 off 55% game time in the first match game.
Now, there's one more cheap ruck that we did briefly touch on in the first ruck show, but at that stage we had very, very low confidence in him, and that's Zach Smith, who's now at the Suns. He scored 122 points off 16 disposals and 39 hitouts against the Adelaide Crows on the Friday just past. Witts wasn't in the game, so obviously, similar to Cameron, not maybe a true reflection of Smith going into the season proper, but any thoughts on Zach Smith and if he gets named round one?
Exactly what you said with Witts, I think that I doubt that he is named round one because they have other options. So they've got like Sam Day, Peter Wright, King. They've got some pretty tall forwards that can play that second ruck option. So I doubt that they play two, and I think Witts is in line for round one. Even at the Cats, he seemed to have these huge games every so often, but just wasn't able to do it on a continual basis.
Now, you talked about Segler potentially slipping a little bit. I wonder, even if Segler's a less attractive option in the rucks, starting a Cameron type and having a Segler or even a Patton up forward could potentially come into focus a little bit more. Any thoughts on that, Mark?
I definitely thought about it, and I think that if you're doing Naismith, it would be like the ultimate solution because it just adds a whole bunch of insurance for you. I think the Patton is too expensive. If he was 250, I'd pick him. I think he's just a bit expensive and unlikely to get an average above 80, so it makes it really hard for you to pick him. Segler did score 101 against Melbourne, but he was on about, I think it was 30 at halftime, and then rucked against, Jackson, was it, the number two pick? So rucking against like a first-game player for most of that second half allowed him to inflate his score significantly, and even then he only got 101. So I don't think Segler's a terrible pick, but not likely to make my side at the moment. I do think we might have to be a bit creative in the rucks, though. I'd say at the moment I'm getting the vibe that you're at least 90% picking Gawn.
Yeah, I think my best chance of not starting Gawn is having Darcy Cameron come through and another ruck option named on the bench. Okay. If I can find two rookie rucks and the second one has reasonable job security, I might try that, and maybe with a Segler backup in the forward line. I think if you were trying to do Naismith, Smith, or Cameron, you'd probably want to be exploring the Segler backup pretty seriously. In which case, you know, if you're considering Segler and Naismith, both compromised options, the question you have to ask is how much compromises do I want to take in search of like the right team value or team structure? All those decisions are pretty tough, and I think really we need to look at the rookies to be able to come to a concrete opinion on that.
Yeah, you're right, and I think that you probably need to have a few different versions of your team depending on how the rookies do come up, just so that you're not making crazy compromises at the last minute. Like, you sort of have what compromises you're going to be willing to make, because at the moment it doesn't look like we're going to have as many rookies as we're hoping in sort of any position, really. And so you're going to have some forward planning around that, and we may have to be making those big compromises on the team. So I reckon personally I'm at 60% Naismith, 40% Gawn at the moment. So yeah, things have changed quickly, and we'll probably still need a bit more information to see what happens though. And it does have a huge impact on the rest of the team. It's just with Gawn at 700,000, if you go down to Naismith, you can almost end up with two extra premiums in your team in other positions. So we'll see how the week progresses, mate. So I'm guessing that if you are running Gawn, that's going to place limits on the rest of your team, right? Which is sort of where we're going for the rest of the show.
Definitely not the type of team that starts both Martin and Whitfield, which still quite a few starting teams are doing at the moment.
I've had a lot of teams that have had Gawn and six premium midfields, but that was assuming that there was going to be some rookies forward and back, which may not happen anymore. So yeah, I've dropped back to five premium mids. Are you looking potentially at quite an expensive premium midfield?
At this stage, yes. I'm finding a few more forwards and backline players that I think I'm happier to take a calculated risk on, just because the premium options in the back and forward line, as per our show a couple of weeks ago, aren't as elite or don't stand out to me as much as they do in the midfield. So is that still the case with you, or are you considering a cheaper option there, Mark?
I think you're really going to need a 110 average minimum from your midfielders. So not a lot of those cheap, like a couple of them may get there, but I don't feel confident enough in them doing so. So thoughts haven't really changed on that since the midfielder show. What's the sort of 5, 6, 7 guys that you're looking at potentially using to fill those spots?
The one that's probably crept up a little bit from when we did the midfield show for me is Patrick Cripps. I think I had him 6th in terms of top starting options, and he's probably crept up into the team a little bit more often than not these days. Started worrying a little bit about Cripps' upside and the fact that he could still potentially improve on a 117. So he's probably pushed up for me a little bit. And the one that's maybe dropped down a little bit for me is McRae. I'm still really keen on Neil with his injury history. One potential way of introducing some value into the midfield, though, that I was thinking about is putting one of the, you know, mid forwards or back mids, one of the breakout players into midfield instead, if you needed to save some money. It's going to make upgrading a little bit more challenging down the track, being that you have to bring in more ultra premium midfielders who cost a fair bit more. But starting a Dustin Martin in your midfield over Patrick Cripps already saves you 100K. So if you are struggling to pay for that many primo midfielders and Grundy and Gawn, and you were tempted enough into some of the breakouts, you could look at pushing a Martin type into the midfield. What do you think about that?
I can understand the reasons behind it. I'm not a huge fan of that one, though. The midfielders are going to score more than the players in the other positions, so you've just got to pick the top line midfielders. I think that those players that you're talking about in the forward line, the value options, there's a lot of risk associated with them. So the fact that you would have a Whitfield or a Martin in the forward line, I think that that limits the amount of spots that you can take risks in. And I think that's actually a good thing rather than having four players like in the Petrarca sort of mold that you're hoping are going to become awesome. I think limiting that to two or three is actually a positive thing for your team and as far as creating the right risk profile. So yeah, I'm not a huge fan of moving Dusty into the midfield and adding more risky players into your forward line. I don't see a huge amount of upside to Dusty. I think you're picking Dusty to average pretty similar to what he did, hopefully get onto a hot start, and just picking him for his durability more than anything.
You had one of the conversation topics here, Mark, is a selection of the top five mids. Do you want to run through that?
Sure. Interestingly that you had Neil in yours, and these aren't top five scoring mids at the end of the year. These are top five selections based on like comparing the value, durability, and scoring potential for the year. So like a pick like Bond, I might not think that he's guaranteed to be top five at the end of the year, but his upside is potentially so big that sometimes you want to take that little bit of a risk that you're going to have someone that could really, really change your season. I have currently Kelly. I actually do think he'll be the top scoring player for the year in the midfield. Then I've got Cripps, Dangerfield, Bontempelli. Them I locked in for. And then that fifth spot, I've been switching around quite a bit. Fife, Oliver, Dunkley, McRae, all probably in decent chance of making that spot.
I've got Neil, Kelly, Cripps, Dangerfield, and Bontempelli.
You're pretty locked to those guys. Who's the one that could go out of those guys?
Probably Neil.
Okay, so he's the one that you're potentially switching around with like a Mitchell or something, whoever else is in on your radar.
I think I had McRae in my top five at the start of the preseason.
Yeah, I think that he'll be a top five mid. It's just he's 670 and it's hard to pay full price for everyone. Is there any consideration for any of the value mids? I think the ones that I've seen the most would be like a Manigola. Viney has sort of come into people's considerations with his great preseason form. Any thoughts of potentially going to one of those guys?
No, I'm very, very much keen on just taking ultra-premium mids as a midfielder. If I'm going to take a value player, even in the midfield, I'd rather take a mid-forward selection or even a back-mid selection that I think can finish in the top six defenders. Ideally, all your starting selections are in that top-tier bracket by the end of the season. And so I'd rather take value in an out-of-position player that is still a top six, just in a position elsewhere, rather than taking a compromised pick that potentially caps my ceiling for the remainder of the season. Strategically, I don't necessarily know if that is 100% going to be the right move, but it's the punt that I'm more happy to take. I hate getting stuck with premium midfielders that average 105 that I've paid 95 for. I've made that mistake quite a few years in a row. And
Crouch last year, like he just he missed some games, which just really cemented how difficult that was. But that midfielder that you go for value and they don't actually step up is just an extremely strong handbrake on your team.
Mm. And actually, Happy Raccoon tweeted something on this a while ago. And it doesn't necessarily have to relate just to this, but I think the tip was don't pick a player based on like 50K or 80K of value because it's only a small bit of value that you're chasing. And compared to, you know, a true value selection like a rookie, you're not getting as much value as you need out of them anyway. But then you give yourself the potential of ending up with a poor player for the remainder of the season. So, you know, just 50 or 80K, just that small bit of value, even though, yes, it's nice to get value in every position, isn't enough to stomach that overall ceiling risk of picking a player that's not premium or not an ultra premium in his spot.
I think that links us nicely to the next discussion, which is around defenders. So I know we were really, really big on Houston early in the year, and I was personally. And I still think that he's a good pick. There has been a change in fixture, which has moved the Port versus Saints game that was going to be in China. It's moved it back to Melbourne and changed their bye to actually be a standalone bye a week earlier, which means that it is really cool to have Saints and Port players in your team by that stage, or especially after that stage, because they just have a bye themselves and then they don't have the bye afterwards. So they will be hugely important in helping you cover through the bye rounds. It just gets a little bit tricky if you have two or three of them on one line because you won't be able to cover them that week because there's no special compensation around only having to need 20 on field. I have Robertson personally as a massive lock in my team. I just think that you're going to need a $260,000 player with a former premium scoring history, which makes it a bit harder to pick Houston in the back line. And the reason why I say it was relevant with the 50K value thing is that Houston does seem like a good pick, but he's only $40,000 cheaper than someone like Rory Laird, who's actually done it in the past. He's super durable, has had good averages in the past, probably has a high floor of about 95, and has averaged 108 in the past, which I don't think Houston is likely to get. So that's where with Houston, I still think he's a good pick, but you like to pick him over someone like a Rory Laird just to save 40,000 means that you could be missing out on a significant amount of points. What do you reckon about that?
Really good call, and exactly sort of what that tip refers to, I think. And so it's not just premium midfielders, but across the board. You know, when you're looking at a guy who can go from 400 to 500, when you're looking at a guy that can go from 500, 600, I think the minimum that you would be looking at to consider somebody as a value player is somebody that has 150 grand of improvement in them, because that's about how much you want to get from a minimum rookie downgrade. Any selection that you're making that's not going to deliver you that amount of value, the value that they're generating is essentially just icing on the cake. You know, just a 5 or 10 point potential value shouldn't lock you into a player, especially if they haven't done it before. What we should be looking toward more than anything else at this stage of the season is options who we think will be top 6 backmen or top 8 midfielders or top in their position by the end of the year and also happen to present value.
So someone like Callum Mills last year, which turned out to be a poor selection in hindsight, is probably fits into that category. I think he was about 400 to 420 to start the season. So presented a bunch of value, but not 150,000 worth, and was probably unlikely to actually make top 6. He might have sort of made, I probably expected him to make top 10, but was probably unlikely to make top 6. And it turned out to be another one of those decisions that hamstrings your team a little bit and just holds you back from being able to really have the best team completely on the park. And I think that this discussion gets super relevant as we look into having those compromises that we're potentially going to be making with our teams, that you can't just compromise everywhere and have all your premiums just around the 400,000 mark and just have a team full of value premiums to avoid having any rookies on the field. You still need to figure out a different way of going guns and players that are going to be making money and still aiming to have the best players on your field at the end of the year.
The thing that should be guiding you in a competition where the options all present minimal value isn't, as you said, Mark, to apply value across the team. It's actually to focus your selections on the North Stars that can deliver you the most bang for your buck. Wherever they present themselves, and this is potentially why Naismith comes a little bit closer into consideration, is wherever they are, you have to go after that value. Because if somebody can deliver you 250 grand of value when every other selection is only delivering 150, that's an extra 100K in the week that you cash that person in that would otherwise take one additional trade. And then you stay 100K ahead of the competition from an upgrading point of view. And it's the reason why Riley O'Brien last year, he didn't even play on field for a lot of people. He was just on the bench. But when coaches traded Riley O'Brien out, they got 300K in one single price injection. And that turbocharges their team, not just for that week, but sort of going forward. So I think, you know, when faced with these limited options in terms of cash generation, you're really focusing not on that marginal value, but on making sure your team is built around potential high value options.
Yeah, and I think the difference what we're talking about here is well described by the difference between, say, Doherty and Robertson, or in the forward line, maybe Petrarca and Smith. So Doherty at that price, at 436,000, you have to pick him thinking that he's going to be top 6, top 10 defender. He's not going to earn enough money or provide enough value for your team that you can trade him out later, or that he can sit at 15th to 20th defender and be a good pick. He actually has to make that top line. Whereas Dylan Robertson at 260 is cheap enough that you can pick him and use him to make money with the points on field being a bonus, because you know that there's potentially 150 plus value in him, and you're almost treating him a bit like a rookie. So you wouldn't want to fill your side full of the Doherty side of selections, but you could use the Robertsons as a way around the rookie problem. I probably tried to get this information out of you last week and didn't get a lot. Jack Stephen, is he in your current team?
Yep, Stephen's sitting in my team currently. One way of trying to populate my team at the moment is trying to put in players who I think can be close to a top X in their position, but obviously hold a chunk of value. And Stephen is one of the clear options for that sort of value selection, and that's why he's making my team at the moment. When I compare him to a Dan Houston, for example, even though I'm not as confident in Stephen making the top 6 as I am in Houston, I'm a heck of a lot more confident with the value that Stephen offers because he's 120K cheaper. And so in considering that I might have to make some sacrifices in terms of top scoring options somewhere on field, the forward line is where I'm most tempted to do it. And if Stephen can get to high 90s, even without breaking into 100s, he still potentially offers 150K of value.
So I just think it's so just interesting this season with our philosophy around 300,000 to 400,000 price players. They're the true sort of right in the middle mid prices and probably the trickiest selections to make because our historical thoughts are that if you're picking someone in that price range, then they have to be a keeper. Do you still hold to that even in a season with low rookies?
Less so, because there's an acceptance that everybody has to make a compromise pick somewhere on field. You're either doing a Naismith or you're putting a Martin in instead of McRae into the midfield. If there are no rookies around, you're finding creative ways of creating that value with some sort of compromise selection. And so for me, he just fits that type of mold in terms of a risk that I'm actually pretty fine taking. Four-time former best and fairest player. Talk is that he'll move back into the midfield. Had a pretty good preseason, barring the calf niggle. Tim Kelly has left, opening up more midfield time. Like, there are just enough boxes ticked. Would I recommend everybody pick him? Probably not. Do I think he's a safe selection? Probably not. In the context of this year, am I a bit more confident to take him? Yes. Am I happy as a Geelong supporter that I get to pick a cat? Yes.
My thinking is very similar to what you've just described, mate, and he's currently sitting in my team as well. I think that even if he's not like a full long-term season keeper, I think those points on field early with his price and his potential to go on a decent run and sort of get up to that 500,000 mark is pretty good. It's just around durability that's the problem, because we don't want to have to be like trading him out pre-buys. But I think that the upside there at the price is probably enough. And it's pretty weird for me to be taking Stephen and Smith in the forward line. I think that that would be something we probably wouldn't normally encourage. There's two factors that probably persuade me a little bit. One, they both have what is essentially premium scoring histories for that position. So if they went back to what they've already shown that they can do, I'd be happy. And the lack of rookies, meaning we might just have to seek that extra little bit of value this year in different spots. And thinking that it's better to do it with a Smith-Stephen type than the 50K cheaper premiums. I am very much struggling to find three rookies in the midfield and three bench rookies at the moment. And we'll have to get into that a bit more next week. But six midfield rookies seems a bit of a stretch at the moment. That's what's really fueling this Gawn situation and the Gawn talk, is that if you can't even find six rookie midfielders to get on field, then you're going to have to get that 600K premium from somewhere to play in that position. So, yeah,
that's where you might hide Dusty.
Dusty not in my current team.
Okay, wow. Have you gone to Whitfield?
I actually have gone to Whitfield in the last week or so, and I know we talked about probably not starting him. Just looking at managing the risk profile across the team. Dusty was in my team the whole time.
Isn't Martin less risky?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so you want more risk, boy.
No, I don't want more risk across the whole team, but the way that the rest of the team played out, I've maybe taken some safer selections in other positions, which might allow me to take someone like a Whitfield.
Okay, interesting, very interesting. I know for our listeners, we have been talking a little bit in hypothetical scenarios and considering balancing of risk and different factors that might not be entirely concrete, but hopefully help you frame some of the decisions that you might have to make in this last week and a half. It's a pretty tricky situation that we're dealing with at the moment. And it's not just Supercoach, but all forms of AFL fantasy. It's just trying to find exactly how we craft a team that doesn't compromise too much of our premium selections, but still gives us enough value to head into the upgrade period. And any final thoughts or comments to sign off on before we do a little bonus for our patrons, Mark?
I just think you're right with what you said. And realistically, this is what experienced super coaches would have been begging for and asking for and hoping, is a situation. We want to make the decisions easier and not be so stressful for ourselves. Like, it's tricky, but this is an opportunity for teams to be really different, for new approaches, for teams to be really taking different sorts of risks and balancing those risks and being creative with their problem solving. Yeah, it's a good challenge for everyone. So just embrace it.
So next week's show, we're going to come back with a wrap-up of the Marsh series, including a rundown of all the rookies, how they went and how things are looking heading into the lockout for round one.
I'm panicking today, mate. I might be panicking way more next week.
There's a lot left outstanding, and I'm not sure I've had this much uncertainty this late into a preseason before. So interesting times, Mark.
Yeah.
We'll go through an exercise of picking a bit of a starting team together over the next few days for our Patreon. So if you're keen to get a squiz of that, patreon.com/supercoachcoach. All right, Mark, thanks again, and we'll catch you all next week. See ya.
See ya.
Don't want this get crazy. Don't want this get crazy. Let's get crazy.